So Brian Roche is the person tasked with heading the government cyclone recovery task force. We discuss the massive and complicated job ahead. The devastation caused by the January and February flooding and Cyclone Gabrielle is still being felt in the North Island. It claimed 11 lives, destroyed properties with an estimated cost of up to $14.5 billion. Last week, the Cyclone Recovery Minister Grant Robertson said 700 cyclone damaged properties in Hawke's Bay and Tairawhiti have been judged unrepairable, and the cost of buying them out will be split between central and local government. 2,500 homes will have to have more flood protection work. So Brian Roche chairs the Cyclone Recovery Task Force, intended to bridge between local authorities, the government and the private sector as the long road to rebuild stretches ahead. So Brian, kia ora, thanks for your time.
Kia ora.
Could you explain the primary role, the brief for the task force?
Well, I think as you've just indicated, ministers decided that they needed to have an independent group that could work between central government, local government and business interests. And that was, I think, the genesis of the task force. So we've been, you know, in the last 2 months spending a lot of time with those three key constituencies.
Can you describe some of what you have seen, the challenge for some of the communities you've visited?
Well, I mean, to say they've been devastated doesn't do justice to the pain and grief that they are facing. It will take a long time to rebuild their properties, and it will take a long time to rebuild their well-being and social infrastructure. But that's the task that we face. It's a task that New Zealanders have faced previously, and we have confidence of our ability to actually find a pathway through all this. But it is very, very complicated, and various entities, including local and central government, have been asked to do things which they have not previously done.
So where are you at with key findings in terms of the way forward from here?
Well, the key findings were signalled last week when ministers made the key announcements around the government's involvement in actually supporting local government in a financial sense to facilitate voluntary buyouts. It also, the government also signalled their participation in the rebuilding of the infrastructure that'll be required to ensure safety of life and safety of residents. So, you know, that was a very, very significant first step, but it is just the first step. The amount of work that is required now to work through the various pathways. The primary objective here was to try and move people from a state of uncertainty to a state of certainty. But that is not a one-step process. There are many steps, and last week was just the beginning of those steps.
Can we start perhaps then with what was announced with respect to Hawke's Bay, the release of the flood maps, for example, and these categories, particularly Category 3? Can you explain again what stage things are at in working through and giving people an answer? What does that actually mean, that announcement last week?
The announcement last week basically says on the work that has been undertaken to date, there is a belief that certain geographies or areas will not be able to have satisfactory mitigation to protect safety of life. Now, that work that has been done and has been communicated to affected residents is the beginning of a process. It was not consultation in a legal sense. It was the beginning of an engagement. And that engagement says, as I said earlier, on the basis of the work we have done to date, we believe X to apply. People can feed back into that process. There will be changes as a result of the engagement process that ensures the integrity of the decision-making process further in the future.
Will this apply to all affected areas from this year's storms, going back to the holiday weekend floods and slips in Auckland, the same process?
Yes, that's the intention. I mean, we've started in Hawke's Bay. Hawke's Bay has been something of a pilot for us as we sort of constructed what an engagement process might look like, but I think has been made public. Auckland is likely to start next week. Tairāwhiti is substantially underway, and there will be other areas in the Wairarapa as well. So there isn't a one-size-fits-all process here, but the principles that we've developed, we believe, to be fair and equitable between the various parties.
There are complicated geotechnical and other assessments being made. You've released maps, for example, or maps have been released, rather, on a flood zone in Hawke's Bay, say, particularly Eske Valley, in Muriwai on the west coast beaches and Karikari, but particularly in Muriwai, for example. It's trying to understand what a hillside might do in different conditions, impacting houses that may be in perfectly good condition right now. Will the process be that each area's specific scientific inquiry takes however long it takes, or will it be short-circuited somehow? What are the parameters over the release of this kind of categorisation?
As I've said, the release is really the beginning of a process. There is a strong desire to move through the whole process as soon as possible, but that strong desire is tempered by making sure that the right decisions are being made. And so the decisions around flood-affected residents are different to land movement, as you've described there. So, this is a long process. It's very technical, but there's a strong commitment from all parties to make sure that it is done on the best available evidence and that it is done in a humane way. We are talking about the lives and households of a large number of New Zealanders.
This is the challenge, isn't it? What happens in the meantime? And again, staying with Muriwai, they were warned, I think, it could be 6 months for that geotechnical work to take place and to give clear answers. What happens to these people in the meantime who are out of their homes, paying mortgages, paying rents, separated? Is there a plan to manage that human suffering while the process is underway?
Yes, there is, and that's been led by local government in Auckland. I mean, I think people are acutely aware of the human impact and the stress that this is placing on people, not just financially, but their overall well-being. I don't think anyone takes any pleasure from undue delay, but it does take time. There is not a shortcut here, and if we want to make informed decisions, then we need to keep to making sure that we have the best available data to inform those decisions. If it takes 6 months, then regrettably, that will be the amount of time.
Category 3, as it stands now, means cannot be rebuilt on. As you've said, there'll be, it sounds like, a bit of to-ing and fro-ing of a process. I've heard of someone in Hawke's Bay, for example, who believes their house is not in Category 3, but their garage is. So, this is what happens when there's a line on a map, right? So there will be some to-ing and fro-ing in the meantime. What is the exit for people, however? Category 3, if that's the final determination for a property, what happens then to that property and its people?
That's the process that has been worked through between central and local government. I think, the decisions are very clear that there is an expectation of a voluntary movement of people. I think it's also equally recognised that, as is shown in Christchurch, some people may choose not to leave their property. But the principle of Category 3 is that there is no practical, built, or affordable mitigation to protect safety of life.
So will it be
There is
similar to what happened in the red zone? Someone will make an offer to buy a person out if they are deemed to be Category 3.
correct, and that is likely to come from local government. I mean, The, overarching principle here is this is a locally led recovery, and it's very important that local government are seen in the seat of the direct engagement and the offer. But it is a joint process in that central government is actively involved in ensuring that there is adequate resources, both financial and people, to get through this process as quickly as possible and allow people to move on with their lives.
So the legal transaction is likely between local government and the property owner with financial, it sounds like some kind of financial assistance from central government. But is that going to be the process?
That's a process that is being currently developed. I can't say today exactly how that will work out, but I think, the first decision was last week was to begin the engagement process. That's likely to take, I think, 4 to 6 weeks. And at that point, the work between central and local government around the funding mechanisms and the mechanisms will have to have been concluded. And that work is well underway as we speak.
Who will determine property value? And this was an issue again post Christchurch.
Yeah, and that is something that has been worked through. I think we're well aware of various reference points, market values, and the determination of those things, but it would be preemptive of me to speculate on that. The numbers that the ministers announced last week were very much ballpark numbers. There is a lot of work to be done over the next few weeks to give integrity to those numbers and integrity to a fair and equitable process for those who've been affected.
We first think of a residential property, but the likes of Esk Valley, Puketapu, Pakowhai, these are farming, horticultural, viticultural areas. How will these properties be dealt with, I guess, in this process?
Yeah, look, I think the first step from last week was very much around residential properties. For those properties that you mentioned, which are mixed use, that is a case by case thing. They will be dealt with, but there's the residents or the house, as it were, on those properties, and then there's the economic restoration of the asset. Those are two separate processes, but they are being run concurrently. There is a significant amount of work underway with the horticultural sector and the banking sector to work through what are the mechanisms that can be made available to affected businesses in the Hawke's Bay and Tairāwhiti.
What does it mean as it stands right now? Would the funding be there? Would the insurance be there for the remediation of some of these productive properties?
Yes, I think so. I mean, the insurance industry have been fully involved in the process and had a very active part. Discussions are ongoing with the banking sector. So, as I say, a lot of this work is not visible to the public, but it is there so that we can come out of this over the next few months with a sort of a credible economic recovery story.
But may people be in a situation where they have a productive business but can't live there, or if they choose to live there, they're going to be uninsurable?
Those are all options which have been actively under investigation, and I see there's been a number of public comments made, for affected people in the East Valley, for instance, where they have said they might be able to sort of continue to occupy the land for pastoral reasons, but not residential reasons. Those are the things that are being worked through, and I know that sounds like there's a lot of uncertainty. But that actually is reflective of the reality of this process.
What have been the determining factors in reaching these conclusions? And I appreciate they will vary from district to district, but what were the facts on which the initial categories were reached?
The facts are really, I mean, each sort of council has had its own categorisation, but they are broadly similar. Category three was basically there was no ability to have engineering solutions or mitigations to protect the safety of life. Category two, on the face of it that there are things that could be done. For instance, increasing, the stop banks and various other household protections. So they have to go through that process. And category one is basically the everyone agrees that it was a one-off event and people can actually undertake the repairs that they are required to do and move on with their lives. So those are very broad, but they are necessarily broad by virtue of the complexity of the issues. This is not simple.
What was the input of the insurers?
Well, the insurers played a really important part in this. What we tried to do, and I think we're largely successful, is the insurance companies aggregated their information through a third party. We used, and that information showed frequency of claim and risk, and we mapped that to the risk analysis that each local authority had. We thought it was important that we had one worldview on this, and I think we've been largely successful. And so, yeah, their participation has been extremely valuable.
Can we look at the more populated areas, say, of West Auckland? And also this complex question of where properties have been built and have been permitted to be built. How is that assessment happening? How are the factors different when there are heavily populated, more heavily populated areas? What's going into that determination?
It's broadly the same where local authority, the level of information from Auckland Council is extremely good. That information has been cross-referenced with the insurance companies. And so they're just finalising that work and the engagement process with affected communities and affected households will commence next week. So the process is largely the same. It has been an evidence-based process. And we're confident about the rigor of that evidence.
Can we talk a little bit more then about the case of how we'll move to actual valuations and possible buyouts? And I think hundreds, I think a figure of 400 to 500, I think it came back from 500 to 400 in Auckland was mentioned. Could you give us any kind of a timeline for when people will find out whether or not they are within that category?
Well, I mean, as I said earlier, that's work that's underway. What people will be advised, if I take Auckland as an example, early next week, they will receive the same information that the residents of affected areas in Hawke's Bay received last week, and their process of engagement will start
Thank you.
at
Sorry
that
to
point.
interrupt. Oh, sorry, Brian, carry on.
So, their process of engagement will start next week. The same process will apply. The local authorities will listen to the feedback from affected people, and then there will be a final determination, including clarity around the way forward for them in terms of the voluntary buyouts that have been referenced by ministers.
Is there an agreement between council and central government in Auckland over how this will happen? Is the Auckland Council in agreement that the negotiation will be with it?
I'm not sure there's an actual agreement, but I would suggest that there's a very strong understanding. We have been very consistent, and ministers have been very consistent in how they see this as a co-funding model. The mechanics of that are going to be worked through and are being worked through as we speak.
So the Mayor's previous comment, our current position is that Auckland Council is not a guarantor of private property interests and we are generally not responsible for compensating property owners in case of loss due to a severe weather event or natural disaster. That is not a barrier to, that comment is not a barrier to an agreement being reached for it to be the negotiator with the property owner.
I mean, whether it's a barrier or not will ultimately be a matter for the mayor, but we do recognise that it's a factor. We also recognise that each council has a different level of financial sort of capability and sustainability, and that's why the work that is currently underway is very important because, I think it's very clear that the taxpayer cannot be the sole funder of this and that there should be a contribution from local authorities. The quantum of that is yet to be determined.
The finance minister has also made it clear that this is not an offer to people who understandably may want to exit their homes. This is about a determination that will be reached with some ability to challenge back and forth, correct?
Correct. It's on the basis of a risk assessment. It's not on a preference for somebody whether they choose to live there or not. And so all of those things are going to play out. And, you know, I know that sounds a bit harsh given the circumstances people are in, but we have to start this process somewhere. And that's why last week's announcements were so important.
Did your task force, and is your task force playing a role in decisions to be made around Coromandel and particularly its roading situation?
Only very much at the periphery. I mean, Waka Kotahi have been heavily involved in that. Our primary focus has been on Hawke's Bay, Tairawhiti and Auckland. The other areas we keep in touch with, but we're not actively involved at this point.
Is this setting a precedent in some ways for a process that is likely to be repeated, regrettably, with growing frequency?
Well, I suppose nature speaks for itself. You know, I think there's a common sense that the frequency and severity of these events are upon us, and what many thought were, you know, in the future is actually now in the present. So as a society and as a country, we have a lot of challenges to think our way through this and fund our way through this.
Did your task force at all consider the argument some Auckland homeowners are making, that their properties were built in floodplains, that their properties were permitted to be built in places that are now repeatedly flooding?
Yeah, look, I think there are a lot of lessons for everybody in this, and you know that's a very good example. So those are the factors that we are actively considering as we go through the engagement with affected communities. And Auckland Council has been very proactive in its policy announcements of 2 to 3 weeks ago of broadly making space for water. I think it is acknowledged that there are issues in Auckland that will take time to address, and they will involve households being actively engaged with next week, as I said earlier.
Finally, have you put together any numbers on either the total cost of recovery or the specific costs of this process of buying out properties?
No, look, go back to this concept of a ballpark number of about $1 billion. I think as we get further into this process and validate the categorisation, particularly of categories 2, and category 3, that number will be firmed up. It's just something that will develop over time.
What feedback have you had since that announcement last week, broadly speaking, from the communities you've been consulting with?
I think broadly positive. I mean, people have been waiting for a degree of certainty, and that process last week was the beginning of that process. But it is one step. We have a number of steps ahead of us, but I think people have understood the complexity of what we've been dealing with and what decision makers have been dealing with, and are generally sort of appreciative of at least the first step.
There's an interesting question here, actually. What role have iwi had in this task force for rebuilding? We know that many of the most affected or most vulnerable properties going forward are coastal marae, for example, or marae in low-lying areas. Has there been consultation with iwi?
Yes, there has, and there's a separate work stream around that. I mean, the issue of whenua Māori land is complicated, and so, you know, we've got a separate work stream that is underway. But I do think the voice of the iwi is going to be very important, particularly in the Hawke's Bay and Tairawhiti and arguably in other areas, to make sure that it is heard and respected.
Do banks have an obligation here? Another question. Why is it homeowners can no longer live in their homes, are still having to pay a mortgage? They're paying rates, etc. as well. Is everyone responding here in the most appropriate way, morally and otherwise?
Look, I think everyone's trying to respond on the basis of what they know, but if individuals have particular cases with either their insurance company and or their banks, I'd strongly encourage them to make that plea directly to them.
Thank you for your time. That is Sir Brian Roche, who has headed the task force in response to Cyclone Gabrielle and also, of course, the anniversary weekend floods and slips in Auckland.